I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, historic visit. President Trump heads to the Department of Justice amid the administration's efforts to find peace in Ukraine and the Middle East. Final countdown. Time is running out for the Senate to approve a bill that funds the government. We have the latest from Capitol Hill. Prayers for the Holy Father. A mass for the health of Pope Francis as he marks 1 month in a Rome hospital. And beautiful habits. Learn more about an amazing event recognizing Catholic religious sisters. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight on Capitol Hill. Right now, Senate lawmakers are voting on the Republican-backed government funding bill recently passed by the House. It is a bill to keep the government open until the end of September. But the other big story is the fallout and infighting taking place between Democrats in both the House and the Senate. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now with the latest. Eric.
Well, good evening, Tracy. Yes, a very busy day up here on Capitol Hill. Let's start off with the six-month CR. Right now, as you mentioned, a vote is taking place in the Senate. Now, Republicans tell me that they believe that they have at least 8 Democrats that are going to cross over party lines and vote to prevent a government shutdown. That shutdown would have taken place at midnight tonight. But for Democrats, the fallout is just beginning. Even before this final vote, Democratic Party leaders in the House, including former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, were urging their colleagues over in the other chamber, Senate Democrats, to stick to their guns, block the bill, and not listen to their party's leader, Chuck Schumer.
I believe it is my job to make the best choice for the country, to minimize the harms to the American people. Therefore, I will vote to keep the government open and not shut it down.
With that announcement, the criticism began. Republicans applauded Schumer's decision.
Schumer should have caved. Government shutdowns don't help anybody. It hurts the American people. It costs more to shut down and restart the government than just to keep it going along.
Not the same reaction from Democrats. They blasted their own leader's announcement just before the Senate vote. Top House Democratic leadership held a news conference urging Senate Democrats to stand firm.
We do not want to shut down the government. But we are not afraid of a government funding showdown.
We're unified in our opposition, and we are not going to buy into this false binary decision that it's a parade of bad choices. We know that already. We know what this administration and their enablers in the GOP and Congress are doing to the American people.
Republicans say the November election results and the back and forth today are signs the Democrats have lost touch with the American people.
I think the Democrats are in disarray. They've got no leadership. They're on the wrong side of every issue. And they're infighting. There's a reason why they're in the minority party. And I don't think they've hit rock bottom yet. I really don't, politically.
Even some Senate Democrats say their party has lost their way.
Democrats keep showing up at every night fight with a casserole, you know, and they have these cheesy paddles. And then, they, you know, pick your fighter cheese ball stuff. You know, where's your messaging?
And during that news conference, Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries, he declined to answer our questions on whether or not he's lost confidence in Senator Schumer's leadership or whether or not that senator should be replaced as leader of the Democratic Party in the Senate. After tonight's vote, senators will head back to their states and won't be back in D.C. until March 24th. Both Republican-controlled chambers, they tell me that they plan to move ahead and put President Trump's agenda into legislative action. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
All right. Thank you, Eric. Well, former heart surgeon and television host Dr. Mehmet Oz testified before the Senate Finance Committee today. He was nominated by President Trump to head the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. During the hearing, Oz faced questions about his financial ties to healthcare and pharmaceutical companies that he would have the power to influence. If confirmed, Oz would be the administrator charged with overseeing the nearly $1.5 trillion spent by the federal government on Medicare and Medicaid. Democratic Senator Senator Elizabeth Warren issued a statement stating the agency deserves a leader that is willing to put the interests of patients, providers, and taxpayers first, not an individual that seeks to privatize those programs. Republican Senator Josh Hawley, he is not on the Finance Committee, but he expressed that he's not yet on board because of Dr. Oz's previous views on abortion and transgender issues.
You know, the president's been so strong on this issue, the trans issue in particular, getting men out of women's sports, asking Congress to ban trans surgeries and treatments for minors, which I think is absolutely correct. So I sure hope that Dr. Oz is going to adopt those positions. I'd be real concerned if he didn't.
Dr. Oz still faces a confirmation vote by the Finance Committee before the nomination could advance to the full Senate. Now, President Donald Trump joins the Attorney General and FBI Director at the Justice Department in a speech. The president said that today we are restoring fair, equal, and impartial justice under the constitutional rule of law. And he said the FBI and DOJ will once again become the premier crime-fighting agencies on the face of the earth. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports.
Tracy, President Donald Trump criticized the Justice Department when he was facing two federal prosecutions during the Biden administration. Of course, those prosecutions have since been dropped. And today, the president revealing his vision for how the agency should operate.
President Donald Trump makes a statement at the Justice Department.
But as we begin a proud new chapter in the chronicles of American justice, this really is something. We're turning the page on four long years of corruption, weaponization, and surrender to violent criminals. They dropped charges against Antifa and Hamas supporters while labeling traditional Catholics as domestic terrorists to Catholics.
The president was joined by families who suffered loss from the deadly drug fentanyl and angel moms who lost children at the hands of illegal immigrants.
The last administration presided over the worst increase in violent crime in our country in many, many decades. We had levels of violence and crime, and a lot of it had to do with the illegal immigrants that came in.
Earlier, Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt told us she blames 4 years of the Biden administration.
We unfortunately saw a Department of Justice that was weaponized against Americans for their political ideologies. It was not focused on fighting violent crime and restoring law and order and public safety.
But Democrats respond, writing ahead of Trump's visit. Today, President Trump will claim he is working hard to restore law and order in the United States, while he actively and blatantly violates the law, undermines the U.S. Constitution in countless ways, and attacks the men and women who patriotically serve their country in the Department of Justice.
Earlier this year, the Trump Justice Department announced it would end the weaponization of the FACE Act against pro-lifers. That law put some pro-lifers behind bars. And when President Trump came into office, he pardoned those pro-lifers. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Canada officially has a new prime minister. Mark Carney was sworn in today and already has a lot on his plate. The former central banker inherits the office during a trade war with the U.S. and an expected federal election. Mr. Carney replaces former Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, who announced his resignation in January but remained in power until his party elected a new leader. A general election is expected to be triggered in the coming days or weeks. All right, for more, let's bring in Brian Dykema. He is the president of CARDIS in Canada. That is a nonpartisan think tank dedicated to clarifying and strengthening through research and dialogue the ways in which society's institutions can work together for the common good. Brian, good to be with you. As you know, Mark Carney was raised Catholic and has remained committed to the faith throughout his adult life. Back in 2015, during the period that he served as governor of the Bank of England, he was named Britain's most influential Catholic by Tablet, which is a progressive UK Catholic newspaper. How do you think his faith has influenced his politics?
Well, I think it's quite clear that it has in a couple of ways. One, just in the question of personal piety, my understanding is Mr. Carney is regular attender of Mass, which is one of the things that we as a research organization would use as an example of somebody who is faithful. So there's the personal piety side of things. But then there's on the other side, when you look at his politics and you look at the way he does that, there are a couple of examples, particularly on climate and on finance, where it's clear if you compare his work and his writing, for instance, on money, there's definitely an overlap, and it's certainly one that's been informed by Christian social teaching. So I think there is a very clear case that that's there. I think there are some questions that remain yet, questions around other areas of Catholic social teaching. Of course, it's a broad and wide area of social teaching on social questions. And then there's also the question of, like, statecraft. How does one conduct oneself as a leader? And I think those are open questions for Catholics looking to understand the extent to which his faith informs his politics. But it is certainly there, and it's certainly something worth taking seriously.
And I kind of want to jump off that, Brian. Despite his reported commitment to his Catholic faith and his publicly stated admiration for Pope Francis, who, as we know, has repeatedly condemned abortion throughout his pontificate, he really is, Carney, that is, a big supporter of abortion. How do you think Catholics view him in that light?
Well, I'm not sure how Catholics view him in that light. I think what we can see, though, is something that Pope Francis himself talked about. So Laudato Si, for instance, on the environment, it's very clear that Mr. Carney would be in favor of that, loves that doctrine. But the Pope himself has said, look, people across the secular world love Christians for their commitment to things like to the environment, to the poor, to the vulnerable. And yet they have questions when we are faithful in other areas of life. And I think Catholics are it's fair for them to ask those questions about Mr. Carney's commitments on other things. And I would say not just on questions related to abortion or other areas of life. Canada has a regime that is perhaps one of the worst in terms of euthanasia in the world. We still don't know his position on that. It's certainly something that would be out of line with Catholic teaching and on very basic thing, and something that applies not just to the aged or the unborn, but to the very vulnerable, including the disabled in the Canadian society. And so those are real questions. And I think those are questions that not only Catholics, but the rest of Canadian society should be asking of Mr. Carney, and that Mr. Carney should be asking of himself. To what extent is my commitment to the Catholic faith being made manifest in my policies? And I think if he were looking for a place to start, he could start with Canada's quote-unquote made regime. And I think that many, many Canadians, religious and non-religious, are concerned about that. I think for him, that would be a good place to start to establish that connection there.
Well, we'll see what comes of it. All right, Brian, thank you so much. We appreciate your time. God bless.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right, now to the Middle East, where Hamas says that it has accepted a proposal to release a U.S.-Israeli hostage and four bodies. The Israeli Prime Minister's office is casting doubt on the offer, accusing Hamas of trying to manipulate talks on the next stage of the ceasefire. That is, Hamas has not said when the hostage and the bodies will be released or what it expects in return. In a statement, the White House criticized Hamas, saying in part, quote, "Unfortunately, Hamas has chosen to respond by publicly claiming flexibility while privately making demands that are entirely impractical without a permanent ceasefire." And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including a faithful perspective. Recent commentary looks at the war in Ukraine from a Catholic understanding. We speak with the author. Plus, 1 month ago today, Pope Francis went to the hospital. As he continues to recover, a special mass is celebrated for his well-being. We'll take you there. U.S. Special Envoy Steve Witkoff met with Russian President Vladimir Putin over the American proposal for a 30-day ceasefire in Ukraine. Putin says that he supports a truce in principle, but set out issues to be addressed before he signs it. Later, President Trump said on social media that there is a very good chance that, quote, horrible, bloody war can finally come to an end. Our recent commentary piece examines the diplomatic efforts to end the war in Ukraine from a Catholic perspective. Daniel Gallagher, who worked in the Vatican Secretariat of State for a decade under Pope Benedict XVI and Pope Francis, says the work requires extreme patience and painstaking strategy. Writing for the National Catholic Register, Gallagher also says in part, quote, "Although the Church offers her teaching and above all, her prayers to bring this bloody war to an end, she would never ultimately claim to have the practical answers to do so. Consequently, there is room for disagreement over the path most conducive to peace." Gallagher also quotes Henry Kissinger, a prominent 20th century diplomat who once said, quote, "It is barely conceivable that there are people who like war." And today we are happy to have Daniel Gallagher on our show. He is a lecturer in literature and philosophy at Ralston College in Savannah, Georgia. Daniel, great to be with you. So tell us, why was it important for you to write this piece?
Well, Tracy, thank you for having me. And I would say that the primary thing that motivated me is we really do need to apply some principles of Catholic social teaching to this particular conflict, but also more broadly to a changing world order. We've never been in a more crucial pass in revisiting basically the relationships that we have and multilateral relationships, particularly in Europe and with the United States. And all of this is coming to a head very sadly and tragically in a war which is hurting everyone. And I wrote this piece basically trying to propose some of the principles that we need to reflect on more deeply in order to perhaps come to some answers. And the quote that you had just shared there about the practical answers, the church wants to be involved, is involved, and isn't necessarily involved to that point of coming up with the exact diplomatic solution. But I am finding in my study of Catholic social teaching that there are a lot of principles and ideas that have to bear on this particular conflict and then on what hopefully follows out of a peace process in the current conflict.
Yeah, I know you mentioned early on the tense meeting that we saw between President Trump and President Zelensky in the Oval Office, saying the world caught a glimpse of what happens behind closed doors. Your thoughts on what took place during that meeting?
Yeah, so Tracy, I was watching this live and I was quite surprised, as many were. But I also, I think, share the experience of others who've been involved in diplomacy and realizing that there was really nothing that unusual about this exchange between the president of the United States, the president of Ukraine, and the vice president, Vance, of the United States. But it never really is seen on camera. My take on this event is that, unfortunately, there was an opportunistic taking advantage of an opportunity to put something out there in front of the wider public. I don't know if it was planned or not, but it obviously caused some very high tensions. On the other hand, I also began to realize that this was not necessarily the end of hopefully a peace process that can, which is not in place, but God willing, we'll be able to put in place in the near future or sometime, but even in the next couple of years. And I don't think that this derailed the hopes of that kind of a process. My hope in being involved and behind the door kind of disputes like this is that you can actually turn it around to make it contribute to that, to reaching a point of perhaps a ceasefire and a process. It's complicated how it gets to that point. But I think that in international diplomacy, in the climate that we're living in, we really have to take everything possibly that can be taken as an opportunity for a step forward needs to be taken in that way. And that might be unusual to look at this event in those terms, but that's the way that I view this. And I view today's events as well in the meeting between U.S. and Russian officials in order to try to come to an agreement on what the next steps are.
And to really right there. Thank you so much for weighing in. We appreciate it. God bless.
God bless. Thank you, Tracy.
I was saying at the Vatican, the Holy Father's medical team says that his condition remains unchanged as today marks 1 month since Pope Francis was admitted to Gemelli Hospital, where he is being treated for pneumonia. This morning, the Holy See's Secretary of State celebrated Mass before a distinguished audience. EWTN Vatican contributor Valentina Di Tonato has more.
We gather in prayer this morning for the intention of the Holy Father's health, that he may recover and return soon among us.
Today marks 1 month since Pope Francis was hospitalized in Rome for double pneumonia. For the occasion, Cardinal Secretary of State Pietro Parolin celebrated Mass this morning in the Apostolic Palace in the Vatican. The Holy Mass was requested by the ambassadors and members of the diplomatic corps accredited to the Holy See, inviting everyone to continue praying for the Pope's health. In his homily, Cardinal Parolin reflected on the essence and purpose of prayer, which Pope Francis has repeatedly asked for during his 12-year-long pontificate.
The best way to present our prayers to God is, above all, to offer a heart, our own heart, open and attentive to his word. This is the key that opens the Lord's heart, a sincere listening to his word.
primordiale della sua parola.
Addressing the diplomatic corps, the cardinal then emphasized that peace requires us to disarm our language in order to quell the hate that can arise in the human heart, echoing today's gospel, which warns against anger.
The wars that stain our planet with blood, and which we try to prevent through diplomacy, do not begin on the battlefield. They are born here, inside the heart of man. They arise from feelings of hatred and hostility that we harbor toward others.
Cardinal Parolin also reminded the faithful of the Pope's emphasis on the importance of asking for forgiveness as a foundation for peace.
The famous three words that Pope Francis always reminds us of are, excuse me, sorry, and what was the third one? Please. Those three words, how difficult it can be to say them sometimes.
Even from the hospital, Pope Francis continues to pray for world peace. He has several times asked for prayers for war-torn regions, and every evening, the Vatican confirmed, the Pope continues to call the Catholic parish in Gaza amidst the current conflict, expressing his paternal closeness. In Rome, Valentina Di Donato, EWTN News Nightly.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, brain power, why a groundbreaking study on Alzheimer's is giving credit to an order of religious sisters. Plus, a closer look at an initiative here in the United States to highlight the important work being done by Catholic nuns. Researchers are hailing a decades-long study on Alzheimer's and dementia, and the findings are thanks in large part to contributions from religious sisters. A so-called nun study was launched in 1986. Since then, hundreds of members of the School Sisters of Notre Dame donated their brains posthumously for study. They include members of the order in Milwaukee, St. Louis, Manicano, Minnesota, Wilton, Connecticut, and Baltimore. A recent article in the Alzheimer's and Dementia Journal said the study provided, quote, critical contributions to our understanding of Alzheimer's disease and related dementias. Well, the news comes during Catholic Sisters Week. This initiative seeks to put the spotlight on the important work being done by women across the world who have taken religious vows. For more, we turn now to Sister Cora Chaley. She works for Vocations in the Sisters of Life in the Bronx, New York. Sister Cora, great to be with you. We appreciate it. Tell us more about this wonderful initiative and why it's so important.
It's so good to be with you, Tracy. Thank you so much for having me. And, you know, it's so good to just be able to celebrate and to celebrate life and to celebrate vocation and what the Lord is asking. And yes, I'm a sister of life. So we love to celebrate life. We love to uphold the dignity of each human person. So we're so grateful to be with you to celebrate Catholic Sisters Week.
Yeah, and we are so thankful for all that you all do. Tell us, how did you all celebrate, you know, Catholic Sisters Week?
You know, we love a good celebration, and, you know, we love our community life. So we love just being together, upholding each other, and of course, prayer. So upholding and just celebrating and enjoying. And we're looking forward to the solemnities coming up this week. So we have more celebrations to come. But I think the big thing is community and just upholding each other and each sister in community as bride of Christ, each of us just bride of Christ and her love of the Lord and how she radiates his divinity. Each of us is a spark of the divine. So we're just grateful to be able to do that and to celebrate with you.
Yeah. And we mentioned that you work in vocations for the Sisters of Life. Yes. So tell us, you know, what you are seeing in terms of who is being drawn to the vocation and to, you know, to consecrate a life as a religious sister.
Yes, it is an incredible gift and privilege to work in vocations, just to be there to really minister to those and serve those women asking deeper questions about life and love, and particularly their hearts, what is on their hearts, and the Lord drawing them to himself. So it's a very sacred space to be in, and I'm just there with them to catch them, to uphold them, and to really guide them in discernment and prayer. So it's an incredible privilege, and we're seeing women from across the country and also other countries just reaching out because they've really received a particular grace that the Lord is drawing them closer to himself. And it's an incredible gift to witness.
Oh, Sister Cora, that is wonderful. We're almost out of time, but I quickly want to ask you this. If you could tell us, you know, what drew you to your vocation? And if there's a young woman who's discerning right now, what would you tell her?
It's amazing. Every heart is so unique and it's so beautiful and individual. But I know that the Lord, he drew me to himself just as I was growing closer in prayer and desiring to go to adoration. So Eucharistic adoration, I really just spent time there. And that's when I encountered his sacred heart, his beating heart, his heart pierced for me. And because his heart is open, I'm able to go in and to come out refreshed and renewed. So I stick close to his heart and I praise God that his sacred heart and the Eucharistic adoration is such a big part of my story, just to become a bride, a perpetual bride of Christ, which is such a huge gift. And what I would say to young women who are discerning, I would say just open your hearts, open hearts and open hands in his, just to be an open disposition to receive his life and his love within. And just know that he sees you and he knows you and that each story is so unique and so particular. So just keep leaning into prayer, silence, sacraments, and he's there to catch you, to guide you in whatever vocation he wants you to flourish and thrive in.
Well, Sister Cora, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. Thank you for your joy and God bless you.
Thank you so much. God bless you. Bye.
And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.